in the night. Your heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
Hey, everybody, welcome to Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is Friday, August 23rd, and while it is still pretty hot here, I felt a slight breeze in this morning, and I feel like that means it's almost spooky season and it's almost fall, and that's the best time of year, the most wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, it is. I'm not as optimistic because my phone says it's 97 degrees right now, so...
It's terrible.
But maybe, hopefully soon... At the very least, we'll be getting a breeze in just a few weeks when we're in San Diego, and then probably not a breeze in Phoenix, and probably not in Las Vegas either. But San Diego, we're really counting on you to get us some cool weather. We're there for our full moon energy tour.
Absolutely. We're going to take our tour to the beautiful coast of San Diego. We're going to tell you all about the dark side of the moon. We talk about what really happened during the Apollo missions, a little bit of lunar lore. We're going to add in some new stuff we haven't added at other stops yet. So if you've seen the show before, it's an all new show, and we cannot wait to bring it to y'all in San Diego on September 17th. Phoenix, September 18th, and Las Vegas on September 19th. And we're finishing it out home here in Dallas on the 17th of October, which is a full moon of October as well.
And by then, it will definitely be spooky season. Hell so yeah. For all the details, including dates, times, venues, and more, visit sinisterhood.com/liveshows.
Awesome. Yeah, now... This is a lineup of stories that you have curated for us. Thank you very much. And thanks for everybody taking the time to write these out. They do run the gamut, as always. We have no shortage of parent pranks gone wrong. But until then, we have a lineup of all of your odd but true stories.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Ashley, and it is called The Day I Got the Text That My Brother Was a School Shooter. Hi there, you both do a wonderful job and your empathy is palpable. Thank you for the gifts you give us all each week. This story is unbelievable, but I can assure you 100% that it is true. A few years ago, I was driving to work on a normal afternoon. My two younger brothers, who we will call Josh and Aaron, were both still in high school. Josh was a sophomore and Aaron was a freshman. While I was driving, I got a text from Aaron that said, "Our school is on lockdown." I assumed this was a run-of-the-mill drill or something that wasn't a big deal, so I just texted back, "I'm sure it's okay, just do what your teacher says and follow directions." I didn't think too much about it, just figured the school was either practicing or being overly cautious about something. I pulled onto the highway. Next, I got a text from Aaron that said, "I'm freaking out. Everyone in school is texting my phone. They're saying that it's Josh, that he has a gun." I immediately felt my body go electric as my brain struggled to process this information. Josh had just, days before, gone through a pretty rough breakup. I started getting tunnel vision and feeling shaky and knew I needed to pull off of the highway as soon as possible, which I did. By the time I pulled over, Aaron had texted me a photo. It was a Be on the Lookout poster, or BOLO, with our brother Josh's photo and name on it. There was no mistaking it now. There was a graphic with my little brother's name and face on it, saying to be on the lookout for this student, and that, quote, recently his girlfriend had broken up with him, and he was going to do something about it. I felt sick to my stomach. I immediately started calling and texting Josh. I was saying, please don't do this. Stop now. I can come pick you up. You can get out of there. I'll talk to you. Please call me now. Please. There was no response from Josh. I felt the pit in my stomach grow and couldn't believe this was happening to my family. Aaron kept texting me from lockdown. He was in a full panic. His phone was blowing up with Snapchats and texts from kids hiding in other classrooms, forwarding him the BOLO poster of Josh. I tried to think clearly. What do I do right now? I decided I needed to get to my mom. The sad news is that me, Josh, and Aaron had an older sister who had passed away just a few years before this. I couldn't bear the thought of my mom going through another tragedy and felt the need to be by her side. My mom is a teacher in the same school district as my brothers, but across town. I started driving to her work as quickly and calmly as I could manage. Here is where it gets truly crazy. All of a sudden, I got a text from Josh. All his text said was, "It's not me. I'm with the police. It's not me." I had no idea what was going on and was hesitant to feel any relief yet, but I was hopeful that somehow this was a big misunderstanding. My mom, Aaron, and I reconvened and waited to hear more from Josh, while my dad went to the school to meet with the police and find out what was going on. The school was released from lockdown, but Josh was not with all of the other kids. He and my dad didn't get home until after 6 p.m., and you'll never guess what had actually happened. A student at the school had brought a gun to school, not my brother. This student had the gun in a backpack and stashed the backpack in a bathroom, which another student somehow saw or heard and reported it, so the school went into lockdown. Now, one of the teachers at the school was Josh's best friend's dad. He was like a fun uncle to my brothers with a teasing relationship. This man had the biggest lapse in judgment I think I've ever heard of from an adult. During the real lockdown, this teacher decided it would be a fun joke to make a fake bolo poster of my brother and project it on the screen in the classroom. During a real lockdown. The teacher said that all of the students in the classroom knew it was a joke, but obviously the kids took pictures of this joke bolo, which looked very real, and started texting and Snapchatting it around to the other students like wildfire, without the context that it was fake. The bolo even reached the police and certain news stations. My brother was not even in the classroom when this all happened. He had been going to the school office for something, so luckily he ended up sheltering in place in the office with some of the administration. If he had been walking around the school, this quote, joke, and the rumors it started about him being the gunman could have led to him being shot on sight. My parents were, of course, beside themselves that this had happened. Regardless that it was never my brother, the rumor had already done the damage. We started getting concerned calls, even flower deliveries, to our house and my parents' work, saying that they were here for us. And these people were obviously under the impression that Josh had brought a gun to school. My parents had to fight tooth and nail to get news agencies to print retractions and tried furiously to have the school send or make an announcement that it hadn't ever been Josh. But they wouldn't. My parents considered suing the school district, but decided not to since it was the same district that my mom worked for. Many kids never ended up believing that it hadn't been Josh, and when my brothers tried to return to school the following week, they both came home after a few hours because the bullying was too much. Like I said, this was a few years ago now. The teacher was obviously fired, which was really hard as his son was Josh's best friend, and they grew apart after this. But Josh and Aaron are post-college now and are doing great. However, I'm sure the trauma of experiencing this has stuck with them both, especially Josh. I am very lucky that even though I experienced the moment of utmost fear and panic when I received the text that my brother was a school shooter, it turned out that he wasn't, and no one ended up getting hurt either. The kid who had actually brought the gun ran from the school during lockdown and ended up being sent to a juvenile rehabilitation school. Thank you for hearing my family's story. I've always thought about sending it in and finally found the time. Thanks for all you do, Ashley. P.S. Here's a link to the news report about my brother's school and the gun that was discovered in the backpack.
This is, I mean, obviously a fireable offense. A lapse in judgment is the right term for that. I get it. You're trying to lighten the mood while the kids are nervous, but something realistic looking that implicates a real student. It's not like you said, Bolo, Fred Flintstone, you know, like a fake character. It's like an actual kid.
I don't think there's ever a time during a lockdown where jokes are appropriate. So I don't know that lightening the mood is the time for this. I mean, there are drills in place that the kids have to do. Ella just had to do hers yesterday. That when this happens, what you do. And none of the training I've seen is you put a student's picture up on the projector and make a joke about how he's the gunman because his girlfriend broke up with him.
Especially when his girlfriend did break up with him.
Fucking crazy.
Right. And Ashley's totally right. If he had been either in the bathroom or roaming the halls or something like that, not with the office administrative staff, that is very dangerous. If you have, the news report she sent, there were officers dispatched to the site and everything. That's dangerous. So I'm so glad your brother obviously was not doing it, but on top of that has moved past it. But God, what a time trying to go back to school. And there's a rumor about you that's not even close to true, that started for literally no reason.
And you also lost your best friend because of it. Yeah. Because his idiot dad, who was a teacher, thought this would be a good idea.
No.
That is one of the wilder things I've heard of a teacher doing before. Absolutely bananas. And
for sure.
It sucks that it affected the rest of your brother's high school time. I'm glad that they're doing well in college now. But yeah, that would stick with you, that kind of trauma. Not just for him, everyone there. I mean, going on lockdown because of an actual gun is traumatic, period. To be blamed for it and then have to try and live that reputation down in high school, that's a tall order.
For real. And you see how fast the rumor spread. What didn't Mark Twain say? A lie can get halfway around the world before the truth puts its shoes on or whatever. It's like, it doesn't matter that it wasn't you. You know, it's like with Snapchat and texting and the image gets sent without context and all of a sudden you're implicated. But yeah, like Christy said, Ashley, we're very glad your brothers are doing well. And yeah, this affected her too, though. That's such a terrible feeling that you feel helpless and something's going on with your family.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Oof. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall during that firing session of that teacher when they have to explain, or probably not explain, like, you know why you're here, right? We don't need to go into this.
Let's all just leave quietly.
This was the stupidest thing anybody's ever done in the history of teaching.
Bless your
heart.
Well,
thank you so much, Ashley, for sending that in.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
This next one is from Brandon, and it is called Cursed Episcopal Summer Camp. Hey y'all, I'm Brandon, Patreon member, The Way Back Recap, a longtime listener but a first-time writer into Freaky Friday. As summer is beginning to wind down, I wanted to share with y'all some rather peculiar experiences I had while attending Episcopal Summer Camp growing up. From listening to past episodes, I know Christy had less than pleasant experiences with Episcopalians while attending an Episcopal high school. Those Nimrods suck major cat turds, not only for ruining Christy's high school experience, but also tarnishing the reputation that Episcopalians have built for being cool, accepting people. I want to apologize on their behalf and assure you that most of us don't suck. In fact, growing up gay in the South, Episcopal Church Camp was the first place I felt accepted and free to be myself. However, the vibes at camp weren't always so pleasant. The campgrounds themselves were rumored to be haunted and cursed, as it was built on top of an old family farm site. You were actually able to see old and tattered gravestones sliding down a hill past the cabins due to erosion. The many years I was there, I experienced ghostly laughing of children in the middle of the night. I was using the infirmary's phone to talk to my then boyfriend. I had my blankets ripped off me while sleeping in the most haunted room, and I experienced the creepy feeling of someone watching me from the woods while alone in my cabin. In this particular cabin, there were reflective windows installed backwards, as in anyone in the woods could see inside the cabin, but when inside, you only saw your reflection. This story I'm sharing with y'all today is actually more of a true crime story than paranormal, but I'm more than happy to share those with you too. Anywho, I attended camp for several years before I became a counselor my junior year in high school. As the fourth of six children, I was more than happy to spend the summer away from my family. I got to hang out with other kids my age, build my own identity, and party on my days off. Camp was the first place I drank alcohol and kissed a boy. This was a dream job for a closeted, sheltered teenager. Plus, I was getting paid while doing it all. For anyone who has never worked as a camp counselor before, there's usually a week or so of training. We called it Counselor Training Week. Clever, I know. where you would take CPR classes, training on identifying signs of abuse in children and what to do, and pretty much doing everything you would normally do at camp, like arts and crafts, canoeing, or camping out, just without any campers present in order to iron out any potential problems. Well, during our mock campout, all seemed to be going to plan until it was time to turn in for the night. It had been a long day of canoeing and hiking to our designated campsite along a lake in western Kentucky, and all 14 of us counselors, ranging from 15 to 21 years old, were exhausted. I was in my tent with one other counselor, just about to doze off, when in the distance, I heard what seemed to be someone crying. I brushed it off, thinking I was just hallucinating the whole thing, when the sounds became somewhat clearer. This time in the distance, I could definitely hear someone screaming. I immediately popped up and woke my tent mate up with my quick movements. "What's going on?" he asked. I just shushed him and motioned for him to listen. It was weirdly quiet for a few seconds. Then we both clearly heard someone yelling, "Help me! Help me!" At this point, we were both alert and out of our sleeping bags, but silent as we both realized what we had heard. We just stared at each other in disbelief, and being 2 16-year-olds, we had no idea what to do next. I suggested that we wake everyone up and go looking for whoever needed our help. My tent mate, Andre, quickly shot that down and told me we should stay put because we didn't have any weapons of any sort and it was the middle of the night. I reluctantly agreed, and we sat in silence as the cries for help eventually stopped. I'm not sure I slept a wink that night, but when the sun rose, everyone climbed out of their tents. Everyone seemed to be distressed and uneasy, but no one spoke a word as we gathered around the embers of the campfire. Finally, someone broke the silence and asked, "Did anyone hear that last night?" And all the color from everyone's faces drained. We all immediately chimed in. We had all heard it, and it made everyone sick to their stomachs. Eventually, we made our way back to the main campgrounds and informed our groundskeeper about the incident, and he promised to look into it. As counselor training week ended, we all took 2 days off before returning to camp the following week. While at the breakfast table, about a week after the incident, we saw the local paper. A body had been found in the local lake, stuffed in a suitcase. Could this have been what my entire staff heard? Were we witness to someone being murdered? After reading the article, obviously we all felt horrid and strangely guilty. Could we have done anything to stop this? Could we have intervened? Did we actually hear this happen, or was it all a terrible coincidence? We were truly baffled by it all. In hindsight, a group of teens and barely legal adults probably couldn't have done much to help without a weapon, but it weighed on us heavily. Much time passed, and we followed the story of the body in the suitcase. It turned out to be a gay man that was murdered for, allegedly, making sexual advances at the murderer. That's right, the gay panic defense was used in trial for this asshole who committed a heinous crime. I don't believe justice was ever fully served in that case. But that night, and that particular crime, has stuck with me throughout the years, wondering if I could have changed that man's fate somehow.
Oh, Brandon, you guys were kids. That's such a horrible thing to have to endure. And then I'm sure you still hear it, right? You can't forget something like that.
Yeah, it's to be 2 16-year-olds just out there camping by yourself, even if you've got like 21-year-olds, you're all basically still kids. I don't know, without a weapon to go to hear someone screaming and help me. Brandon didn't say what the year was, so I don't know if anyone had cell phones, but sometimes the only thing you can do is just kind of, sometimes the best thing you can do is just stay put to keep yourself safe. But what a horrible feeling, because I too would question, what if we had intervened? What if we'd gone over there? But you have to ask yourself, what if it had been a murderer and you had also become victims? So it's a terrible, terrible story. And the gay panic defense was such a just ridiculous thing to use. Maybe this was a while ago, since that was Because I haven't seen that used in a minute.
Yeah, some states have outlawed it. And they're, you know, that's the, our, if you're not familiar, listeners, that is addressed in the murder of Scott Amador, the Jenny Jones Show murder episodes that we did. We sort of discussed that at the end of part two. And it is something that should be eradicated in all 50 states and federally, certainly. But yeah, you're right. It was way more popular in the 90s and the early 2000s, but sadly not completely gone in all jurisdictions. And yeah, that feeling you have where you just think, well, what if, what if, what if? And I think you're right. When you're a kid, the answer most of the time is keep yourself safe, stay put. You know, that's not your jurisdiction. You know, if you could have called the cops or could have called somebody, but you just can't know how worse it could have gone. And the person at fault here is not you guys. It's not the kids that happened to hear it at the campsite. It is the perpetrator, the murderer. I mean, he's the one mm-hmm. truly upon whom the blame should be leveled, for sure. But that's still such a feeling of that helplessness in the moment. So I'm sure.
And guilt.
Yeah, that guilt. But I hope you've given yourself a break.
Just to clarify, K through 8th, I went to an Episcopal school. For high school, I went to a public school. But if I've given the impression I had a bad run in there, I have to dispel that, because I actually really enjoyed elementary and middle school. And I really liked my school, despite not, you know, following the Episcopalian faith anymore. It was a good experience. I didn't have any bad experiences there. And everyone I knew was really cool. The Father Bob, Deacon Schmidt, they were super cool. So I don't want you to think, Brandon, that I don't like Episcopals.
Well, especially
but
also,
I appreciate you thinking that for standing up for me. But they certainly did not ruin any school experience for me.
Good. And it sounds like they gave Brandon a wonderful, aside from this, you know, the hauntedness of it in this true crime situation. But being a young gay kid in the South, having a place mm-hmm. where you can like have a summer camp and not have to be afraid is... it's a beautiful thing. So I'm glad they were able to give you that, for real.
Yeah, I'm super glad that you were able to find that there and had such a great experience. And yes, give yourself a break.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Well, this next one is from Ari. Ari didn't name this, but I'm going to call it Come and Knock on My Door. And Ari writes, "Hi, ladies. Thank you for taking the time to read my story. I enjoy your show and the women helping women energy you bring. Thank you for encouraging women to trust their gut and stick up for themselves. This story is one of those stories that I forgot about until listening to another listener's story. Hearing about the girl who was followed by the Jeep of men reminded me of something that happened to a girl from my dance class when I was younger. This happened in the early 2000s, when kids didn't have cell phones, and not everyone's parents had one either. I knew Kirsten from ballet. She was tall, very pretty, and had a friendly, bubbly personality. I think she stopped dancing around age 9 or 10, and I continued dancing until I turned 14. I was homeschooled, so after Kirsten stopped dancing, I didn't see her around. That is until the day that Kirsten and two of her friends showed up on my doorstep looking terrified. We were around 12 or 13 at the time, and I, of course, invited them in and got my mom. Kirsten was crying and very rattled. They sat around my dining room table, and my mom asked them what had happened. My parents lived in a very nice neighborhood that was next to a not-so-nice neighborhood. There's a small market between the two neighborhoods that is easy to walk to. It takes about 15 minutes, but you have to go by the not-so-nice neighborhood to get there. It's not the worst area, but you should use caution walking there. I used to walk or ride scooters to that market all the time to get snacks with my friends, and that's exactly what Kirsten and her friends were doing that day. Kirsten told me and my mom, through her tears, that when they were leaving the market, she thought she saw a boy she knew on a bike. She waved at him and yelled hello, but once Kirsten realized she didn't know him, her and her friends turned and walked away. Unfortunately, the man and his friend had already had their attention on the group of girls and rode their bikes toward them. The girls started walking faster, but the men on the bikes caught up to them, and one of them tried to grab Kirsten. The girls bolted, and the men followed and continued to try to grab them. They ran until they wound up on my street. Kirsten banged on my neighbor Katie's door, but her family wasn't home. Luckily, this spooked the men, and they rode away. Kirsten then remembered that I was Katie's neighbor, and they all ran to my house. Once we knew this man was not around, parents were called, tears were wiped, and everyone got picked up and taken home. I remember being so surprised finding them at my door. It had been at least a year or two since I had seen Kirsten last. I'm glad that she remembered where I lived. I'm sure we had carpooled at some point. Looking back as an adult, this situation seems much more scary to me. I'm an American Sign Language interpreter for the deaf and interpreted a seminar on human trafficking that was eye-opening. I remember learning that girls are most targeted around 11 to 12 and boys around 12 to 13, which is the age range Kirsten was then. I am so glad that they made it safely to my door. Thank you for taking the time to read my story and keep it creepy. Much love, Ari.
Well, first of all, Ari, thank you for being an interpreter for the deaf, for the ASL interpreter. We
absolutely
love when we can have those at our shows. So thank you. And those human trafficking seminars are very jaw-dropping and eye-opening, certainly. Yeah. This is very scary, but kind of the 90s, we're like, oh, stranger danger. But I think now that we've all sort of come to understand the prevalence of stuff like this, yeah, certainly that's more eerie than a simple, I think, just you made a comment at a guy and he made it back. The fact that they're giving chase, like they start to follow you to
grabbing
a house.
You,
grabbing at
you. Put their hands on you. I've mentioned many times one of my worst fears as a kid was being kidnapped. So yeah, that something like this would have sent me into a spiral. And
certainly
that quick thinking and a group of girls, I'm glad that there was a group, helped everyone stay safe that day. And fuck off to men that think, oh, you know what? That 13-year-old girl, I'm going to go over there and try and grab her and ride on a bike.
No.
Regardless if you're like, I'm just going to scare her, or you have even more nefarious intentions, don't do shit like that. Don't grab anybody, but especially kids. That's wild.
Mm-mm. And I think you and I have gotten to the same point. What did we say earlier? I told you my awesome friend Jill said, I'm not taking shit anymore. And now, Jill, I want you to know, because you listen, we started saying that too. And I think to myself, now that I am an adult, that I feel, and I'm a childless adult, as they call us, but I feel a responsibility to all kids. And I hope we all do. It's like we're all our neighbor's keepers, that if you see some guy running down little girls, a simple, what the fuck are you doing? Like, hey, what are you guys doing? So it's always sad when you hear about kids in a situation like this being like, we scrambled, we had to run away. And it's like, I can guarantee other adults were at that market. Like somebody else was walking around, and you always wonder, like, where the, not that the little girls are allowed to go walk to the market. It sounds like that was a regular thing, but those we're only able to do those as a society when we're all kind of watching out for each other. So it's like, we all got to be able to holler and be like, leave them kids alone. What the hell is wrong with you? And shout out to your mom for just letting them on in.
And to you.
Yeah.
I, too, remember Ari, things happening when I was around that age. And now as an adult, I look back and go, what the fuck was that? Because at the time, you don't have the adult brain you do now to realize how dangerous it was or how inappropriate it was. But now in hindsight, you do. We can't go back and change that, but we can educate people and hopefully make it easier for kids now to not experience shit like this.
Just be able to exist, for sure. Well, thank you, Ari. This next one is from Anonymous, my sweet daughter. And the subject line is, being a nerd stopped my possible abduction. Hi, ladies. It's your girl, Anonymous, she, her, checking in from Canada. Of course, I need to start with how awesome your podcast is, and especially for giving a safe space for people to share stories. It was through listening to previous Freaky Friday stories that I realized the following story probably isn't just your run-of-the-mill underage girl daily life. So, without further ado, the story. Back when I was in high school, age 16, I had done a complete 180 on my life. I had gone from classic teen rebel to total nerd who loved school and classes. Because of this, I actively chose to take psychology at night school to ensure my top 6 grades that would be going along with my applications to university were all at least 80% or higher. I loved chemistry, but alas, chemistry did not love me. Night classes were at another high school further downtown, so I had to take the bus, then the subway, then walk about 5 minutes. This particular night, we were having a test in class, and I was super excited about it. I knew I'd do well even without studying, but I was reading my notes anyway. The bus stop near my house has a huge mural right behind it. While I was waiting, a man in his early 30s came up to me and asked if I could take some pictures of him with the mural. "Of course," I said. I took some photos for him on his phone. We started talking while waiting for the bus. He told me he was from Mexico and was visiting a friend, and that he was on his way to a party. He then asked me how old I was and where I was going. I told him I was in grade 12 and was on my way to night school, that we had a test, and that I needed to study. I want to note that I was, and still am, very small and look younger than my age. When I was 16, people would always guess I was between 12 and 14. I like small talk and short bursts, but I cannot keep it going, so I was hoping he would get the hint when I said that and reopen to my notes. He did not. He kept talking about what he was doing on his visit, what his city in Mexico was like, etc. He was doing all the talking, so it was easy enough for me to just nod along. Then, he asked if I'd ever visited Mexico. I said no, but that I would like to. He told me if I do, I should stay in a guarded resort because, and I quote, "pretty girls like you would get kidnapped on the street." Okay, thanks for the warning. Fortunately, the bus came quickly after and was one where it was single seats on one side and double seats on the other. I chose a single seat so that he couldn't sit beside me as I wanted to immerse myself in the world of high school psychology. Lo and behold, he sat in the seat right behind me. The bus was pretty empty, but I didn't think much of it because we had just been talking. He started talking to me again, but this time, the conversation focused on how pretty I was and how I should go to his friend's party with him. I told him, "thanks, but no thanks, I'm going to class." Again, not because this was raising red flags, but because I genuinely wanted to go take this test. The whole 20-minute ride to the station, he alternated between telling me that I was beautiful, that I should go to the party, and that he was a nice guy. I want to remind you that even though 16 is already underage, I looked even more underage than my peers. Then he started to lean forward and put his hands on my thighs while asking, "Do you mind? This is just what we do in Mexico." I didn't think so, but who am I to say what's socially acceptable somewhere else? And again, continue on with pestering me about going to his party and me being annoyed that I couldn't study in peace. Finally, the station was only a few stops away, and only now did I realize something wasn't right. Earlier, he had told me he had to get off before the station to get to his friend's house. Well, he was still on the bus, and at this point, there were only two stops left before the bus would pull into the station. Sure, maybe he was getting off right before the station, but somehow, I didn't think he would. This is when I finally switched from annoyed psych nerd to alert city girl. I casually stretched and glanced around the bus to see who was on it and who may be able to help. I noticed a girl from my English class and her friends at the back of the bus. Thank God for schools enrolling students living in the same areas. I never really talked to her, but my English class was small and we definitely knew each other's names. We'll call her Angel. The bus pulled up to the station, this man still on it and right beside me. I quickly got up and rushed to the back door and called out, "Oh, hey, Angel!" Immediately, as all girls and women know, she and her friends realized something was up. I quietly point out the man. They closed ranks with me in the middle, and we all went down to the subway together, loudly talking, but quietly giving updates on where he was. He followed us from the bus platform to the lower part of the station before you descend further to get to the trains. Then, he disappeared. We panicked for a second, but one of the friends noticed him going back up to the bus platform. He was not going on to the subway. They sat with me on the train until their stop, and Angel told me she'd see me tomorrow. It sounded like an order. I made it the rest of the way to class and back home unscathed, and I never ever saw that man again. Plus, I got 100% on that test. It seems so obvious now as I write this that it probably wasn't just a party, but up until I started listening to other people's stories, I genuinely just thought he was an annoying man who wouldn't let a girl study and wouldn't take no for an answer. Just the usual stuff. I'm just thankful that he happened to waste his time and some bus fare on a nerd who just wanted to go take a goddamn test. Keep it creepy, Anonymous.
Well, Anonymous, first of all, good for you for being such a studious student at such a young age. That was not me, but I appreciate your drive.
Incredible.
And it's shit like this that I've, just like in that last story, it's just, it's that age. I feel like that's a really scary age for girls, mm-hmm. even though you're 16. 16, yes, is scary. But if you're looking more like 12 to 14, that's a really scary time to be around scary men by yourself, mm-hmm. because you're not a girl. You're not yet a woman.
Right.
You're kind of in the middle. And it's like, you know, I think that there's something to be said for why they're preyed upon at that age too, because of that. Cause mm-hmm. you don't know what to do and you're vulnerable. And sometimes cues or things that happen that now would be like, oh, that's dangerous. At the time, it doesn't send off the red flag you would think it would, because you don't have that knowledge yet.
Most certainly. And I feel like it's every year we all collectively get a little bit more, educated or edified on like what is and isn't okay. Like, because when I was your age, Anonymous, I would have probably reacted the same way. You're just like, this is fine.
Yeah, freeze.
This is everything. You freeze and you're just like, mm-hmm. I'll just keep studying. And I hope, and if you're 16 and you happen to be listening, there's a bus driver at the front of the bus. If an adult mm-hmm. man even comes near you, much less touches you, yelling, I do not consent to you touching me. Do not touch me. I'm going to get the bus driver. Like, get up and walk. You did nothing wrong, Anonymous, mm-hmm. because like I said, 100% I would do this. And I even think we were taught a lot 5, 10, 20 years ago of like, well, you have to be polite. You have to be nice and good and quiet and don't make a scene. And I think in the last few years, we've all been like, we're going to raise some hell. All of us are going to raise some hell one way or the other. And I love mm-hmm. that friend, that literally that term of closing ranks, like it chokes me up to think about that is what usually women do for each other, right? Of like, you're in trouble. I got you, you know, like, come mm-hmm. on over here and we'll close rank around you. But to clarify, like, you did nothing wrong in this situation. That guy is fucking terrible. Who knows where he's from, if he's really from. And he was like, well, this is just where I'm from and this is what we do. It's like, bitch, you're just making stuff up now. People grabbing on each other. Like, all
the whole
that kind
thing
of stuff.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
The photo and all of it. It's sad because, like, now as adults, we can be like, oh, from the photo, he'd already clocked her before that.
Yeah.
You know, and then, but to a 16-year-old studying that has no idea some dude's like checking her out and then mm-hmm. thinks that they're just like helping someone out, maybe a tourist. It's the being naive and innocence that always hits different when you reflect back on that, because that is something that is precious and fleeting. And whenever mm-hmm. someone does anything to try and steal it from you, you know, before it's the time for it to go away. At some point, we all as adults, like, learn the horrors of the world. But when you're a kid, you don't got to know all that shit just quite yet.
Right. You deserve to be able to be friendly and nice and helpful. And if it really is a tourist, take their picture in front of a mural and not be at risk of, oh, this person's just testing to see if I'm nice and we'll talk to him. And, you know, it's like we can't know that until many years later and with the benefit of hindsight. And I hope that we're getting more towards a world where people do this less as far as the man grabbing the woman. And as even though that will never, ever go away, there are more of us that are going to say this is unacceptable and we're not taking this. But
oh, yeah. You can be like me and just tell your kid, not yet, but she'll be getting some. Don't ever do, if a man asks you to do anything, just don't do it.
Yeah. That's what I was like, as a kid, my mom would say, grown-ups don't need kids' help.
Nuh-uh.
Like, just, that's
it. He didn't need you to take a picture
selfie,
to say,
sir.
Sorry, you can do a selfie. I'm studying.
It's called a timer, bro.
And this is not blaming anybody, but they know once they have engaged you mm-hmm. and you're talking to them, they've got their hooks in. So mm-hmm. just like shut it down before it even gets to that.
Like we say, it's just, you didn't do nothing wrong. You're just hanging out and it's a snake trying to mm-hmm. look for prey, just slithering around. But I'm glad your angel literally was there waiting for you.
Truly.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Anonymous. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. This next one is, we got no shortage of these. It's from Molly, and the subject line is Traumatic Dad Prank in a Cemetery. Molly
writes. I just gotta say, What the fuck is wrong with
dude? I'm so glad for Molly and everyone that we've read your story so far, though, that you've all found each other. Like, we've been able to connect you all.
We all know now.
You know, you're not alone.
It was just a different time. Yes. And, but I mean, there are probably parents that still pull pranks, but there was something about the 80s and 90s, man, where everyone was just like, wouldn't it be funny to scare the shit out of our kids? Like, really scare the shit out of them, like where they almost think they're dying scared. Wouldn't that be fun?
Fuck them up. Let's fuck them up bad. It's like, yeah, get it. Go get, and then go they're get all the like, chainsaw. Yeah, yeah. Get the chainsaw.
God right. Damn.
Well, Molly writes, the most recent Freaky Friday or Wacky Wednesday episode unlocked a memory I keep locked away in my brain. Of course, I had to share. Like many Midwestern families, my family would go to Hilton Head Island for spring break every year. If you've never heard of it, Hilton Head is in South Carolina and is host to many golf courses, bike paths, and alligators. This happened during my family's trip when I was maybe 7 years old. One night, my parents decided they wanted to go on a spooky cemetery excursion. The island has multiple historic graveyards, with some graves dating all the way back to the 1700s. As a child, I was scared of everything. Now, as an adult, I know it was really just anxiety. So, naturally, I was not a fan of the idea of a pitch-black cemetery walk. But, being a small child, I had no choice but to load in the car with the family. We drove a short distance to one of the graveyards. Once I was out of the car, I immediately clung to my mom's arm, keeping my eyes to the ground. It was muggy and dark. Spanish moss hung from the giant oak trees. Our only light was our flashlight, which my mom held. She insisted on walking just far enough from the car so we could see some graves. My heart was already pounding, and I refused to look into the darkness, afraid of what horrors I'd see. That was until my mom stopped walking. She said, "Look, Molly." I followed the beam of her flashlight to see it focused on one of the crumbling and mossy graves. As we looked, the unthinkable happened. A screeching ghost flew out from behind the grave. It flailed and yelled from under its white sheet. I absolutely lost my shit. Even after the ghost took off its sheet to reveal itself as my dad, I was still extremely upset. I don't remember how long it took me to calm down, but I do remember that I told my dad that I would not dance with him at my wedding because of what he did. Turns out, traumatizing your child in a Hilton Head cemetery is a family tradition, and they had to do it to me because my two older cousins and two older brothers experienced the same prank. The adults in my family had four separate times to think about the effects of this on a child, and they still chose to repeat it on me. Just like Anand's chainsaw dad, still no apology after all this time. My dad did recently shake his head and laugh while saying, "What was I thinking?" when the story came up. Yes, Dad. Also, Mom, Aunt, Uncle, Grandpa, and Grandma, what were you thinking? Is this a boomer thing to never apologize? Anyway, I got married in July 2023, and I did dance with him at the wedding, but I will never forget. Anyway, love the podcast and you both. I will send in my near-death experience at a murder mystery party story soon. You've already read one submission of mine, Rome Catacombs, so I feel greedy, but it's a good story, I promise. Keep it creepy.
Well, this is what they mean when they talk about generational trauma. Dude. You've got multiple lineage now of people that this is the family tradition. Some people have a crest or a shield or something. We go to the cemetery and scare the ever-living shit out of our kids.
Right when they're at an age where they are aware of their scaredness. Like, she's seven, she's already afraid to be there. And then just we'll make her feel like her worst nightmares came true. It'll be great. It'll be hilarious. Put the sheet on, Larry. See what happens. He's like, I'm going to do it. But it's crazy, though. That's a great question of, like, even in retrospect, him being like, what was I thinking? It's like that, like, but you're like, what were you thinking? And you're sorry for what you did?
Yeah.
Nope. Okay. We just stopped with what was I thinking? Like, it's, I don't know what it is, but it's like, parents, like, let's take our ego down. It's okay.
It's hard to admit when you fucked up. But but I have actually been to Hilton Head. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit older. I think I was 9. It's gorgeous. There are many golf courses. I have a very fond memory of a golf course there with my dad and a lot of alligators. And yeah. I also remember alligators being where we stayed. And just there's a big old pond in the back of these condos and there were just alligators.
It's like, that's their pond. Don't go back there.
Like, they named them. Yeah. They were Elvis and Priscilla. They were fucking enormous. Sure. And they would lay out on the docks and stuff and they'd just be like, yeah, don't go over there. That's Elvis and Priscilla. And then my brother, who was like 3 at the time, look over and he's just running around the pond.
Oh no.
And I had to run up because even as a child, I had crippling anxiety.
You're like, the gators like, are going to get him.
Chasing him down, like, you're going to get taken by a gator. But yeah, Ella is 6.5. If we did this to her, that is game over.
Yeah, my niece is
never
7.
Coming back from that.
Yeah, my niece is 7. And I was envisioning her and Ella, and I was just like, no, they would never trust, you know, I could never
she
do that.
She hates to be scared like mm-hmm. that, like a surprise scare. And also like the breaking of trust, the violation there. We would be living that one down, having to apologize that for the rest of our lives. So
I mean, I love Molly that you're like, I'll still dance with you. Although I'm so happy dancing and be like, I remember what you did. Yeah.
You're like, isn't this nice? Do you remember that time when I was 7 years old in the Hilton Head Cemetery?
You remember the cemetery? Yeah. Oh, well, man. At least he asked, what was I thinking? That's more self-reflection than a lot of these folks we hear about. So he's a little bit ahead of the game. Maybe one of the future prank stories we'll get. And it's like, and later my mom sat me down and said, I really shouldn't have done that. And I'm sorry if that caused anything with you. And our collective jaws will drop. Because so far, everyone's like, hey, it was a joke. It's fine.
It's so weird, though, to think, what is it or was it, because I think it happened more then, but still, that gives a parent pleasure. And I'm like, for parents that like genuinely love their kids and are good parents, mm-hmm. but there's something about like seeing them really scared and being mm-hmm. responsible for it. And you think it's funny. Like, what pleasure is derived from that?
That's a great question. Cause our parents would, like I said, mess with us, but in like silly ways. I told you, we told that story on the air where I killed a huge moth and told my mom while she was reading the newspaper. Yeah. And then she's like, oh, it says here a giant moth. There's a $10,000 reward. You said you mm-hmm. flushed it down the toilet? Uh-oh. And I'm like, what? Let me see. And she's like, I'm kidding. Like, in two, you know what I mean? Like, you tell mm-hmm. the joke, you get him to get, oh, I was like, oh, and I just thought I lost out on a magnificent moth. But, you know, that's one thing to kind of get a rise out of them or mess with them and stuff. But yeah, I don't know what that feeling so is.
Because it's a tradition.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what you just gotta say. It's a tradition. And we don't question tradition in
we
this
don't,
family.
Apparently okay? not. Oh, well, I'll tell you what, though. That I'm glad, Molly, that you've shared your story and everybody that shared your parent pranking story, because I feel like they're cautionary tales for current parents. And then also, it really is like a support of like, you're not the only one that your parent, they did. Like Christy said, it was just kind of like the trend. Like, was there a Reader's Digest article of like yeah. 5 ways to freak out your kids for great laughs from mom and dad? Like, where did you get these ideas?
I don't know. I'm going to have to do some more digging into yeah. that, because I'm really, my curiosity is now piqued. Like, why was that like
prevalent,
kind of a trend in that maybe horror movies spiked? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so. Everybody was like feeling like Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on mm-hmm. Elm Street kind of stuff. I don't know. But thank you very much, Molly. And absolutely, I want to hear about an NDE at a murder mystery party.
Yeah.
That sounds incredible.
Yes, please.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Well, this last one, I'm going to go ahead and say it's a cryptid story.
And I'll tell you what, in jot form, where they have to select what the topic is, anonymous selected cryptid for this. So you're not alone. The apple did not fall far from the tree.
That's right. Well, my darling anonymous has sent in this one. And the subject line is, the time I saw the Easter Bunny. Hi, ladies. First Freaky Friday submission. I've been listening to the show over the past 2 years pretty consistently. And by pretty consistently, I mean I was part of the top 1% of listeners on Spotify for 2023. You guys are what hype me up on my way to work to put up with those shitty shifts and never fail to make me laugh even when I'm having the worst day. Thank you for all you do that us listeners don't see that make the podcast run, including Tommy and Paris. I was inspired to write from watching the most recent season of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. One of the episodes was on Mothman, which of course made me think of the podcast episode. What stuck out to me on the Unsolved Mysteries episode was how people were seeing Mothman right outside their homes, and one woman's story about how she didn't report her sighting for 20 years because she was afraid of being laughed at. With that in mind, let's get into it. I was about 7 or 8 when this took place. My childhood home was in Lansing, Michigan, and we lived on a side street just off Cedar Street, a super busy street. My bedroom window looked out onto the front yard and street. It was the early morning hours of Easter morning, I'm guessing about 2 o'clock or so. I woke up from a dead sleep and looked out my window above my bed. The street light is on the sidewalk between my house and the neighbor's house, and it was quite bright, so I could see all the way to the circle drive across the street. In the middle of the street was a small box. I remember thinking to myself, what is that? Why is that box there? How odd, because it wasn't there earlier in the day. Next thing I see is a pure white bunny with red eyes sitting in the strip of grass between the driveways. How weird. You don't see white bunnies out and about, especially in suburbia. I watched as it hopped into our yard, right in the middle next to the tree. It was only a few feet away from my window, just a normal-looking bunny, but the kind I've only ever seen in a pet store. Pure white fur, white as snow, and those eyes, no denying how bright red they were. It sat there for only a few minutes before it hopped into the neighbor's yard and sat for a few minutes, then into the next yard until it was out of view. I went back to bed, and later in the morning, about 7, 8-ish, the box was gone from the street. I remember telling my mom about it, and she played along with it, whereas my older brother taunted me about it for quite a while. I recently told my husband the story, and he just laughed. I know it may seem hard to believe, but I am 100% sure I saw the Easter Bunny that night.
Well, who am I to say you didn't?
I was like, I love the idea that the Easter Bunny, it's not a tall, human-sized, anthropomorphic costumed thing. It's a literal rabbit that just hops and the magic goes into your house and then hops to the next house and the magic and hops. Who are we to say? David Sedaris has a great story where he's in France learning that in Easter they don't have a bunny, they have a bell. And it's like a bell that visits houses. And he's like, that's stupid. We have a rabbit. And it's like, you know, right? You kind of realize how all the traditions are quite exactly. Silly. But it's like, yeah, who are we to say it's not a Benicula ass looking rabbit with the red eyes?
I was thinking maybe it has two forms and it's like an innocuous little bunny, kind of like, you know, a familiar. Mm. And then it can like transmogrify into a different version of itself, yeah. Or just like poofs and it, I don't know. I also thought, what if your neighbor, because Anonymous did send in some pictures that just for us to get an idea of where things were and things were labeled. So I really appreciate
Very
that.
Very helpful.
What if the people across the street had kids and were giving them a bunny for Easter and they're like, won't these be so cute? We'll put the box out there in the yard and it'll be like the Easter bunny dropped it off and that fucking bunny got out. And then that mom come Easter morning is like, motherfucker, Mark, the box is gone. It's like, and they got to go looking around the neighborhood box? For this like, rabbit.
I left it on the porch. Well, the box is empty. It's in the middle of the street. Where's the rabbit? They're like, we don't know. And they're like,
it hopped away.
They're like, well, what Sandra doesn't know won't hurt her. Don't tell her that we were going to get her a bunny. Like that's just nature's bunny now. And then so I'm sure someone took it in. It's like it's a pet store bunny or
a white rabbit. Yeah. I feel like those are, you know, we see bunnies in our neighborhood a lot, but they're always brown. Like,
yeah.
So either if I saw a white rabbit first, I'd be like, well, I'm blessed and thank you, Easter bunny. And then second, I would think this is somebody's pet.
Yeah. I would get out of the way because I'm sure it's late for a very important date.
Like, yeah. So sorry. Either got a tea party to go to or some kind of egg to deliver to a house.
Yeah, it's going to Mr. McGregor's garden to go dig out some carrots and eat on them. But I love that, though. That's the kind of, you know, that childhood where you're like, y'all can shit talk all day long. Mm-hmm. Say whatever it was. I know what I saw. I saw a motherfucking Easter bunny. And I hope someday in a cosmic way you're completely vindicated and somehow, some way, it's like, that really was me. And you're like, yeah. I knew it.
You walk into PetSmart and there's just a rabbit there and it just winks at you. One of its red eyes just winks at you. Like, magic bunny.
Oh, I love it. And thank you very much for being a top 1%er. That's incredible. And for the screenshot evidence. I love that too.
I love receipts. Just so everyone knows, Anonymous listened for 19,316 minutes, mm-hmm. making them a top 1% fan. So thank you so much, because I was on Spotify last night and some things I was listening to, it was like 45 million streams this month. And I'm like, can you imagine? And 19,316. I also have a hard time wrapping my brain around. So thank you so very much.
That is incredible. And that makes us feel great that you want to hear our voice that much.
Yeah. I don't even want to hear my own voice that much. So for someone else to, thank you so
Bless
much.
You.
Well, and thank you to everybody else for sending in your Freaky Friday stories. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot or the Easter Bunny, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you've felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 900 hours of segments like Dear Sinister, Judge Christie, True Crime Headlines, Am I the Asshole, and Popular Opinions, Heather Saves. That's probably half of the bits we do. There's a lot of fun segments that we got going on over on Patreon.
We like to rotate them through. And in addition to that, mm-hmm. you also get monthly minisodes, our monthly live streams, quarterly live bonus content, ad-free episodes, merch discounts, and just the group of the best goddamn people on the whole internet coming together. I swear, we always say the community of the best listeners, which is true, but you're solid folks and we appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. You can also get archived bonus content once a month just for signing up. You don't even have to do anything other than that. We're just saying thank you. Or if you want to see what one of the tiers is all about, sign up for a free trial for a week. You can join at any level. And as long as you cancel before the trial's over, you don't get charged, or stick around and subscribe. And we would love to have you.
Hell yeah, you can head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddo. And be sure to check the pin post on Patreon to get your merch discount.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. We make it super simple to do that. Follow us on socials and check out the episode description. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and links to live show tickets for all the full moon energy shows.
You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Watch full video episodes of the show on YouTube. They drop ad-free on Patreon as well. And check out clips of the show on TikTok. You can order custom videos of us saying almost whatever you want us to say at cameo.com/Sinisterhood. We can deliver a happy birthday, congrats on back to school, congrats on a new job, sorry about your divorce, congrats on your divorce. Anything, any kind of message for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, we would love to deliver it at cameo.com. Where are you at on the computer?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy.
Sinning.